this week on Millennial.
The internet loves to overcorrect, which is why you got the whole, well, actually, misery business is problematic because she calls another woman whore. But then the fact that TikTok turned around and said, actually, you know, Hailey and Paramore, it's okay. Like, we want you to play the song more than we want you to be a good feminist. Like, none of it makes sense. I used to like the Game of Life a lot as a kid, but I don't think that that one like holds up as well when you were an adult.
No, because you are playing the Game of Life and you're like, this sucks. Whether Biden's motivation here is purely because it is the right thing to do or to give Democrats more momentum in the midterms, the right thing has been done by 6,500 Americans, and that's what I care about. And it's also a step forward towards more sensible drug legislation in the United States.
Welcome to Millennial, the home of pretend adulting and real talk. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
And so COVID has gotten close to me, but as far as I know, it hasn't gotten me just yet. Pat, my boyfriend, who I live with, came down with COVID this past week. He started having symptoms Monday night. His throat was hurting, but he was testing negative. Tuesday, he got a fever, still testing negative. Wednesday morning, tested negative. Wednesday night, still had the fever. He takes a COVID test. He walks away from it. I walk up to it, and I see it. The double lines. I'm like, did you just take this test? Because you need to back the fuck away from me. We were keeping our distance because I didn't want his fever. And there's something else coming up that complicates matters. Luckily, I hadn't been too close to him prior to that. And my understanding is that people are most infectious in the first 5 days. So I feel like we're in pretty good shape in terms of me avoiding it. But what's complicating things is that my brother comes in tomorrow and Pat is feeling better at this point. It's been nearly a week now, but still slightly testing positive. That positive line is faded, but still there. So, you know, and I'm paranoid. I'm going to get COVID. We've had the windows open. He's been isolating in his dungeon. I mean, in the guest bedroom here. Look, I just can't lose this battle to Laura. We got this little competition going on.
Andrew, I hope that you're at least bringing Pat meals. Like, are you bringing food and sitting it outside of his door?
It's every fucking day up the stairs. Your food has arrived, sir.
That's really sweet.
Back downstairs. I'm like holding my breath when I get close to the door.
Why don't you just put a mask on? All those masks that you didn't use when you were flying.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that. I was like, thank God I didn't use those good masks because now I got the good masks ready to go. That's what's going on. I've been delivering meals and yeah. So hopefully
he's
all
still
better.
Working? Is he working from home? Or
he's had
a
couple days off. He did work today.
Okay.
Unsurprisingly, it's a bit of a mystery as to how exactly he got it. But I figure it's in the it was from the office because he goes in 3 days a week. So that's that. But like I said, I've avoided it so far. But like the moment my throat starts to hurt, I'm like, this is it. It's over for me. Today, I feel a little phlegmy in my nose. I'm like, this is it. But I've tested 3 times and I've been negative every time, including this morning.
Have you gotten a PCR?
No.
I would recommend them because they are more accurate. And I don't wish this on anyone. But if you do have it, I want you to know, one,
right,
so that I will know, but two, so that you can take proper care of yourself. I should probably flip the order of those things. Like, I care most about you taking care of yourself.
You're sick. I don't even know what we're betting. $5? If I get it, Pat's paying the $5
just
bet.
Just like glory.
Yeah,
glory. I don't glory of knowing that you remain unscathed.
I don't think we're betting anything.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. No, but Laura has a good point because, I mean, we all work hard. We know that you work hard. If you're sick, like, you shouldn't be overdoing it. We've seen all those studies about how long COVID can affect people detrimentally sometimes and about how, like, continuing to work if you do have COVID is not good. So why not just run down to the local CVS and get a PCR?
Yeah, I guess I could. I haven't really been showing symptoms, though, other than this maybe late flashing cold that comes and goes really quick. So I just haven't really felt the need to. And plus, he did test positive. So I'm like, if he's testing positive, I'm probably going to test positive. And we have been isolating. So it's not like, you know, I'm going up. But the work point is good. Laura, you have a tale too related to COVID?
Yeah, no, mine's not as exciting as yours. Just wanted to say that
it was very exciting.
Yeah, this afternoon I got double jabbed. I got my booster, my fourth COVID shot, and my flu shot. I don't know if you can see my Band-Aids.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, so did that today. And just wanted to share my experience for anyone who might be feeling nervous. I know sometimes ahead of the next booster, people start wondering, do I need it? Are there going to be any side effects? I feel fine. I have the slightest of headaches at this point, but you're also getting to witness me in the first hours of my injection. So if I get worse over the course of the episode, you'll see it in real time. I think it's going to be fine, though.
I see a third eyeball on your forehead, but other than that, you look normal to me.
Oh, that's just because I recently rewatched Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Okay, got it. Method acting in real time.
Right.
I also got my booster.
Oh,
hey, welcome, too. Twinsies.
I know. Sporadically, I was at Costco getting my tires changed, and I had 2 hours to kill. And I was walking by the pharmacy and they had the sign up. They've had the signs up for a flu and booster. And I said, do you have time? And they were like, yeah, if you want to walk in and get your booster now, you can do that. And I was like, great. I would love to do that. So I'm all boosted.
Boost me, baby. What did I say I was going to say to the pharmacist? Listeners, remind
poke
us.
Poke me, daddy.
Poke me, poke daddy. Me daddy. I think that was it. Yeah. Did you say poke me, daddy? Or mommy?
No, I didn't.
I think that's what Dr. Fauci said when he got his booster.
Yes.
It was a missed opportunity.
How did you feel, Pam, afterwards?
Super sore arm. And I was a little bit tired yesterday, but I'm all cleared up now. So it wasn't as bad. I think if I'm remembering correctly, the first booster kind of knocked me out for a couple of days. But
same.
Yeah.
I ended up getting Pfizer this time, too. So I got Moderna for the first 3 shots. But there are no Moderna shots to be found within a 50-mile radius here right now. So it's all Pfizer.
Joe Biden's Moderna shortage. What is he going to shorten out next?
Is there a Moderna supply chain issue?
First, it was the baby formula. By the way, Pat did, when he officially got diagnosed, well, when he tested positive for COVID, he got on the phone with a doctor and got those pills you can take to reduce your COVID symptoms.
Oh, yeah. Paxlovid.
Yeah, Paxlovid. He got it, helped him, but it also comes with other symptoms, including,
oh my God,
he had a metal taste
so
in his
long.
Mouth. Huh?
Yeah.
So long?
Like the list of symptoms are really long, because I went to go pick them up for my mom because she got COVID. And it was kind of scary hearing them rattle off all this stuff, like high blood pressure is a common symptom, low blood pressure, like you said, like the metallic taste, and the pills are huge. So good luck to him swallowing them. So.
And it's like take 4 a day or something like that. You're like constantly having to take them. It doesn't seem worth it to me just from the... Now, look, we're both younger, so that's a factor, of course. Yeah. If you're older, you probably have a better reason to take it. But it's just to take something that's just going to give you more symptoms. I don't know. I would rather ride out COVID, I think, than worrying about another wave of symptoms. And what if it doesn't work?
I was going to say I did not take them. And there were a couple of days there where I kind of wished that I maybe had, because I got a really bad sore throat. I could barely swallow anything for a couple of days. But at that point, because that's the whole thing, and this is good to remember, you really do have to call your doctor right away if you want to get on that, because I think there's a short window.
Okay.
So yeah, by the time I was like, oh, maybe. It's kind of like, I guess, if you're pregnant, you only have a short window if you want to get the epidural or not. And then after that, it closes. It's the same with this medication. So,
or plan B.
Yeah,
if you decide
B,
you don't want to be pregnant
too, on the other side of things, right?
Well, if I get through this without getting COVID, I feel like I deserve a little bit of an award, because it still is risky being in the same house. And of course, my brother's visiting. We're going to California in a couple days. So with Pat, is the plan right now.
Is he going to be well enough to travel by that point?
Well, at this point, we're starting to think, like, maybe we take separate cars, which is not ideal at all, but it's better than being in a small enclosed space for 5 hours each way.
I'm mostly just thinking about general fatigue, honestly.
He's feeling better.
It's a trooper. That's good.
We'll see. Anyway, we'll be off next week, by the way. So y'all will find out the exciting conclusion in 2 weeks from now. I just want to mention that.
Exciting conclusion to Andrew's COVID journey.
I want to mention that now because we're going to be off next week anyway. It's planned. If there's no new episode next week, they're going to be like, oh, that's it. Andrew got COVID.
Well, I know that everybody is probably tired of hearing about COVID. And speaking of something else that I think people are tired of hearing about, but is necessary to highlight, is Kanye West's most recent anti-Semitic behavior. We know he's done this before. It's not the first time that he's gotten loose on social media and promoted hate towards various minority groups. He returned to Twitter over the weekend and made this very bizarre post talking about how he was going to go DEFCON 3 on the Jewish people, but then said, it's not anti-Semitic for me to say this because black, and this is a quote, black people are Jew.
Oh.
Singular.
Okay.
But that's not even the most problematic part of it. He was implying and saying things like, at every turn, y'all have blackballed me just because I wasn't down with your agenda. And it just goes back to the same narrative that we hear again and again of people believing that there is like this cabal of Jewish people who are running everything and that it's a massive conspiracy. And that kind of rhetoric leads to a lot of violence towards and against Jewish people. So we have to call it out here. I know Kanye got his Twitter and Instagram restricted over the weekend. I'm not sure where that stands right now, if he's been reinstated at this point.
I don't think so, no.
But figured we should call it out here at the top of the show because he's been making some headlines lately. He recently ruffled some feathers by wearing a White Lives Matter t-shirt with Candace Owens. He went on Tucker Carlson for an interview. So he is definitely coming back around to establishing himself as like an alt-right ally. And it's disturbing and sad and fucked up.
I hope this is the most... I've never been a huge Kanye fan, though I did mention, I think, just last week, one of his songs when we were talking about rap. But hopefully this is the moment where Kanye actually becomes canceled, because this was a whole other level for him. I know he said terrible shit before, but talking about going DEFCON 3 on Jewish people, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? How could you say that? That's just, he's a bad person and unwell, but he's still a bad person.
Yeah.
And he has been locked out of Twitter and Instagram, and those bans both remain.
Good.
Hopefully they stay there. Like Trump, he's clearly a very unpredictable person, and you can't trust him even if you let him back on.
No. And unfortunately, he has such a far reach. I definitely see the narrative that he's unwell, and I think that's probably true. But it reaches a point where it almost doesn't matter, because when you are someone who has such a far reach and can drive and influence people so acutely, what you say matters and how you're yielding social platforms matters. And at the end of the day, these are private companies and they are allowed to restrict and boot people off their platforms for doing things like this. And I'm glad to see that Twitter and Instagram have acted. My hope is that they would make that ban permanent, just like they have with Trump.
I really appreciate the point that you made about how one thing doesn't excuse another, because I think it's okay to express a sentiment like it's really sad that nobody in his life is getting him the help he needs, it does not excuse inciting potential violence by spewing out this really toxic vitriol. So at a certain point, someone has to take action if that somebody is Twitter as a whole, Instagram as a whole, to deplatform, then I think that that's for the best. Although, unfortunately, we have also seen how deplatforming doesn't always work. And so that's where it kind of gets tricky. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done.
Yeah, it should be done. Unfortunately, probably what's going to happen is he's going to go to Truth Social if he's not there already. And he's going to be able to get away with saying whatever he wants. And he'll still get coverage, even though Truth Social isn't as popular. And the reason I think that is you can just see that the media continues to carry what Trump says on Truth Social like it's any old tweet.
We know that Truth Social is going bankrupt, and it is facing some issues of its own. So we can only hope that it continues going down that path. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. And before we hop into our first story today, I wanted to just plug another reminder for our 2022 physical gift for our Bay Level patrons over at patreon.com/millennial, the Millennial Adulting Planner. If you want to receive this, please be sure to pledge or upgrade to the $10 level by Thursday, October 20th, to be able to receive yours. You'll also need to remember to fill out the order form by Saturday, October 22nd. In addition to this gift at the Bay level, you'll receive a new physical gift every year. Plus, you'll get to hang out with us every month on Zoom for every installment of After Dark. You'll have access to our recording studio and the occasional breaking news coverage recordings. We have a ton of other benefits just like these over on our Patreon. And if you sign up now, the great benefit also is that you get access to everything we've done in the past. So there are literal hundreds of hours of entertainment awaiting you over on our Patreon. Plus, I would just say this planner is helping to keep me super organized just in the first couple of weeks that I've been using it.
We also just picked the perfect amount of space for each day, I think, because I don't know about you two, but it really kind of helps me prioritize when I have, you know, like not a minimal amount of space to work with, but enough that you really need. Like, how many tasks can you really do in a day?
Right. Big tasks. You can only do so many. I mean, we have five per day. I think that's a reasonable.
Right. Exactly. Like I said, it just really helps me prioritize like what I absolutely need to do that day. And it's been really helping me stay on track.
Stay tuned on our social media channels because Pam did a lovely unboxing video of sorts that we're going to be posting in the next week. It's really good. So thank you, Pam, for doing that. Oh, it's coming out today.
You got it.
Our social media manager, Chloe, is telling us. Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody. And let's jump into another topic today. I wanted to talk about Paramore, and I wanted to talk about canceling songs and bringing them back. Paramore has decided to bring their hit song Misery Business, originally released back in 2007, back to their concerts 4 years after canceling live performances of the song because people called it sexist and anti-feminist due to the use of the word whore in the song. Haley said, 4 years ago, we said we were going to retire this song for a little while, and I guess technically we did. She said this on October 2nd during a show. But what we did not know was that just about 5 minutes after I got canceled for saying the word whore in a song, all of TikTok decided that it was okay. Make it make sense. So the lyric is about a partner's ex-girlfriend, as is the song. And the lyric goes, once a whore, you're nothing more. I'm sorry, that'll never change. So I thought this was very interesting because obviously Misery Business is a really popular song. And if I'm going to Paramore, I want to see them do this song. It's a freaking great song. It's easily one of their most popular songs. So I wanted to talk today about should we or an artist cancel a song after years or decades have passed and the lyrics are now offensive to some degree? Because after all, lyrics are art. Now, of course, there are varying degrees to this question here. And one of them is probably what was the intent behind using a word or a sentence in a song, for example, the word whore. The lyric does have an angry intent, but that's Paramore's brand a lot of the time. Their music is all about raging. You have to also consider here that Haley and Paramore, they're not anti-feminist. And I also think it makes a difference that a woman is singing it. It's also worth considering how an artist currently sees a song. Do they maybe regret it, or do they feel differently about the song or its meaning? And to that end, Haley actually wrote about this back in 2015 on Tumblr. She said, "I read a couple comments today about how I can't be feminist or whether or not I'm a good feminist. To speak specifically to one of those comments, I'll say this. Misery Business is not a set of lyrics that I relate to as a 26-year-old woman. I haven't related to it in a very long time. Those words were written when I was 17. Admittedly, from a very narrow-minded perspective, it wasn't really meant to be this big philosophical statement about anything. It was quite literally a page in my diary about a singular moment I experienced as a high schooler." So she has changed her position on the song, and she says, "I am not that person I was when I wrote it." And with that in mind, I think it's perfectly okay to perform this song because that's what your fans want.
I agree. You know, there are definitely other examples of songs that I think we'll talk about a little bit later that are clearer examples of things that carry some negative intent with them. But pointing out that Haley wrote this song when she was 17, I'm sorry, who among us did not call another girl a whore when we were 17, especially if it was a girl that we didn't care for, or if it was someone who we saw as, you know, competition for someone that we were romantically interested in. Girls are not conditioned to say or think nice things about their boyfriend's exes. And this captures that reality. But it's very clear from the way that Haley talks about it now, it's not her intent to convey this as a much older person. It's a snapshot of a particular point in time of her life.
I totally agree with that. I always think it gets dicey when you try and look at anything in relation to pop culture with a current point of view lens. And I think that the way that she spoke about bringing Misery Business back in that quote you read, Andrew, really kind of is that speaks to kind of like this phenomenon where you can't ever really win. Because the internet loves to overcorrect, which is why you got the whole, well, actually, Misery Business is problematic because she calls another woman whore. But then the fact that TikTok turned around and said, actually, you know, Haley and Paramore, it's okay. Like, we want you to play the song more than we want you to be a good feminist. Like, none of it makes sense. And I think that that's why overcorrecting can also kind of pose a larger issue than maybe what it's worth. It's better to take smaller steps in the right direction. But going back to my original point, you know, Misery Business was released in 2007. I don't think it's fair to judge somebody for a line like that when it was probably more acceptable to use that sort of language. Nobody batted an eyelash. Misery Business is arguably the first big Paramore hit to go mainstream successful, right? And nobody was talking about whether or not it was wrong for her to use that line in the song. So I think it's okay to hold your favorites accountable, but I think it would be more problematic if she was using that language in a song now with no basis for what the truth is. And it's not, that's not what they're doing. So
I'm also just wondering, why didn't they just drop the word when performing the song instead of dropping the entire song? It's like when on TV, sometimes you'll see an artist do a live performance and they'll drop a word in a song because they can't curse on television. Just do something like that.
Well, sometimes, too, you'll have artists change lyrics. Yeah. I know that we've talked about that happening recently, but an older example would be Taylor Swift's Picture to Burn. She used to have that line, "That's fine, I'll tell mine you're gay," when talking about, you know, an ex that was calling her crazy. And she was like, "Well, I'm just going to tell everyone you're gay, and that's why you dumped me." That was like the whole basis for the burn. And she ended up changing it. So now if you go on Spotify, the new version is all over there. You can't find the original unless like you have a copy or you go on YouTube or whatever. And so I think she changed it to just like, "That's fine, you won't mind if I say," and then she goes into the lyric.
Okay.
But it's interesting also because we're talking about this, like how TikTok has now also decided that actually it's more homophobic for Taylor to take that out because it's like a tongue-in-cheek joke,
oh,
right?
Okay, yeah.
But I just feel like for nostalgia purposes, sometimes people regret the canceling that is done because they'd rather hear the original that they fell in love with. So it's a slippery slope. And I don't think you're ever going to please everybody. But I think that, you know, especially because this is Paramore staging their big comeback. This is the last album they have coming up on their, I think it was like a 20-year contract that they signed with a record label or something like that, or they've been locked into a contract for a couple of decades. We don't know what's going to happen after this to the band. So I think that people would rather hear it than like cancel them for it.
And Haley has fun with it now, too. I was watching a live performance from the other day, and she says to the crowd in the middle of the song, "Did you just say feminism can wait?"
Tell everybody that you guys said the WHORD word tonight. You're getting canceled, bitch.
I love her.
I love that part. You're getting canceled, bitch. So I like that they kind of are owning it now. Let's talk about some other songs that are difficult for us to listen to these days. I got to bring up Bruce, of course, because his catalog goes back about 5 decades at this point. The one song where I'm like, ugh, is a song called, one problematic song, I should say, is a song called Fire. And the lyrics can be read as talking about a non-consensual relationship, which obviously extremely bad. The lyrics go, I'm pulling you close. You just say no. You say you don't like it. But girl, I know you're a liar because when we kiss, ooh, fire. And that last part is the chorus. And there's a little more of that elsewhere in the song with different lyrics. And yes, a very big problem. But I think at the time when this song was written in the 70s, it was a song about a girl who was just shy, and she was interested, but she was just a little bashful. So that's how I've always read it. But yeah, these lyrics have aged horribly. That said, the song is still done in concert, and it is really popular. And when I was doing research today, I actually realized that Bruce wrote the song for another artist called the Pointer Sisters, and it's three women, and they had it in 1978, and it became a big hit for them. And I will also say, and I love this, that this got a live performance from Bruce in last year's run of Springsteen on Broadway shows, and him and his wife performed it acoustically together, and she, Bruce's wife, does the problematic lyrics, which I thought was a great way of kind of turning it on its head.
I got the song that you have in the doc confused with,
I'm on fire.
I'm on fire.
Yeah, Bruce loves the word fire, comes up a lot.
Well, okay, so... It's funny because within like the last 5 years, I think that song came on the radio or was on at a coffee shop I was writing in or something like that. And I think it was the first time I ever heard, like I ever really paid attention to the lyrics. I feel like that gives off kind of a creepy vibe too.
You're right. Hey, little girl.
Like, hey, little girl, is your daddy home?
Yeah. Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire.
Yes,
I'm
I got
on
a
fire.
Bad desire. I'm on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's not great either. So. You're right. But again, these are huge songs. That song was on the Born in the USA album, which was one of Bruce's biggest albums.
That's probably why that's the one I hear more.
Yeah, definitely. I think people today just remember the song as it was and how they felt about it in the 70s or 80s. And I think that's why it's still acceptable.
I think so. I have an entry here that I feel like is maybe a little more clear cut in terms of just maybe not being something that passes the sniff test at all by 2022 standards. I'm thinking about Run for Your Life by the Beatles. Full disclosure, I really like the Beatles. I grew up listening to them a lot. I still like the Beatles. But this song includes such lyrics as, "I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man. And catch you with another man, that's the end, little girl."
Really bad.
And it goes like that throughout the entire song. And there are a lot of other lyrics that use similar imagery about this guy's girlfriend dying if he catches her with another man. When I hear this song now, it's still very catchy. Like, the tune is very catchy. It is a bop. But when you listen to the lyrics, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like I can enjoy this.
if it is a catchy song, and that's another thing with the Bruce songs, they are catchy. You're thinking more about the catchiness than the lyrics.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I almost wish like there was an instrumental version of this.
I'm sure you can find a karaoke version. There probably is one. Do your own with your own lyrics. Another song I want to talk about, and this one is only 10 years old, and this one still gets me. Do What You Want by Lady Gaga and R. Kelly. This song was released on Art Pop in 2013. It was the second single. Obviously, in the years that followed, R. Kelly was accused of sex trafficking and was found guilty in 2021. But there were accusations and a lot of talk and concern about him way before 2013. And there could not have been a worse song for Gaga to have him on. The chorus is "Do What You Want With My Body." The fuck were you thinking, Gaga?
The music video was kind of intense, too.
Also, it wasn't exactly a secret. In 2013, it was not a secret that R. Kelly was a pedophile, a creep, a human trafficker. It was everything that happened with him and Aaliyah was, I think, especially in the music world, pretty common knowledge. So I'm a little bit confused by Gaga's judgment here.
I think that this instance also just really is further proof that, this song's already a couple years old now, 2013. That's almost 10 years ago. Geez. But the music industry has yet to really have its big reckoning in terms of, you know, Me Too and abuse of power. It's largely still overrun by men, both in the studio as producers and also as executives. And so that's why you see somebody like R. Kelly getting a pass for so long. I know that he just went back to court recently and they also found him guilty, which is good, but it is kind of too little too late. It's kind of crazy to think that, you know, like you were saying, R. Kelly being a creep is the worst kept secret probably in the music industry. But the fact that he was still able to collaborate with Lady Gaga, who was at the top of her career when Art Pop came out, is a huge testament to the fact that, like, it's so easy for men to get a pass in the music industry. And women are not granted that same level of decency. And also, they're often taken advantage of in the music industry as well.
It's a good point. And Gaga did pull this song after that docuseries aired, which was just a couple years ago. I mean, this song was live for, I want to say, 6-7 years at least. She pulled it from streaming apps. And in fact, if you go to Spotify now and you look at Art Pop, there's no version of Do What You Want on there anymore. The song is just gone. And the reason I find that interesting is because she did release a new version of the song with Christina Aguilera about 2 years after the song came out, before all the accusations really started heating up around the time of that docuseries. So maybe she saw the writing on the wall and decided to get that new version out there, but you can listen to it. It's on a separate album as a single, and it is really good. And I have always loved that song. I just wish it never featured R. Kelly to begin with. And why not take that Christina Aguilera version and pop it into Art Pop? You took a song out, add one back in. It's the same song.
Yeah.
Without R. Kelly. Very interesting situation all around. Of course, like we mentioned, there's other songs that have aged poorly. There was a BuzzFeed list highlighting songs that have aged well and ones that haven't. Laura, you mentioned Aaliyah. R. Kelly wrote a song for her called "Age Ain't Nothing But a Number." And you can imagine what the lyrics are in that if you haven't heard it already.
Yeah. She was 14.
Oh, boy. The song "Turning Japanese" by The Vapors.
Yep. Oh, man. I haven't thought about that song in a long time.
Yeah. I regret to say how much I liked it when I was a kid. It was just so damn catchy.
Yeah, it is catchy. That's how they get you.
There's many. And I'm sure as time goes on, artists and record labels are being more mindful of the lyrics in songs that they're pitching for releases. So that's good.
Yes and no, though, because we just saw an example of two women that are huge in the music industry that had to retract lines from their songs, Beyonce and Lizzo.
That's true.
I will say that the speediness at which they did that is the testament to how perhaps the tides are changing in that regard. Because it took Gaga how many years to remove Do What You Want?
Yeah, several.
Yeah, Katy Perry is also getting called out in her Discord for You're So Gay.
Yeah.
You guys remember that one?
I forgot about that one.
I
hated
the song, so I never really listened to it much, but I do remember that title. Anyway, I'm glad to see Paramore brought Misery Business back.
Same.
All right. Well, we have a new sponsor on the show this week, and we are very excited to tell you about them because they merge our two loves, coffee and pop culture. Expedition Roasters offer small batch roasted brews using premium coffee beans. All their coffees are inspired by pop culture. For example, there's a brand new Akio coffee, which is a butterscotch beer coffee inspired by, of course, Harry Potter. And it is so good. It's got this like toasted taste, a smoky taste. I was telling Pam the other day to it. It's really nice. It hits the spot for me. Right now, they also have a Pumpkin Spice King brew, which is a limited edition seasonal fall roast. And they also have this one called Roundup Roast. The packaging will remind you of Toy Story. It has a campfire s'mores flavor. Many of these, you'll be able to tell, are inspired by theme parks. It's just a really cool idea. And while many of the roasts are flavored, they don't overdo it with the flavoring. And I actually mentioned this to them. I told them I liked how it doesn't hit you over the head, and I found the balance to be perfect. And they told me that's exactly what they set out to do. They said they didn't want it to be overpowering because then it's fake and you can't taste the, you know, coffee.
Yeah, I tried the Voodoo Brew, which I really liked mixing with a couple of items that I had here at home, just like a little bit of creamer. And then I have some salted caramel syrup, and I was able to put just like a tiny dab of both of those things in there. And it really helped to enhance the flavor a lot. So I think these coffees are also, in addition, if you're a black coffee drinker like Andrew, they're also really good.
That's right,
if you're wanting to make your own like at home novelty drinks with different flavorings and things, because the flavor of the coffee itself is not overpowering, to Andrew's point. So it allows for you to add other things to it.
I really love coconut flavor in coffee, so I really liked the Enchanted Tiki Coconut. And like Laura, I found that some things that I had at home really mixed well with that.
So they're a great company. We're working with them directly to tell you about Expedition Roasters, so definitely check them out. And we have a special offer for listeners. Visit expeditionroasters.com and use code COFFEEGEEKS. For 15% off your order. Again, expeditionroasters.com and use code COFFEEGEEKS. That's all one word. We also have a link in the show notes and on social media. Again, Pam filmed a video, I think. Took some pictures.
Well, I filmed a video too.
Oh, that too. Pam's got it all. I love it. A very cool company. Such a good idea to merge coffee and pop culture.
Let's talk about board games. We all have talked before about how we like to bust out a game every now and then if there's a party going on or if we're at family functions. There was a bit of bad news that came out for Uno fans, specifically Uno fans that love to stack up draw cards when they play. So this broke a couple of weeks ago, but the clip from The Daily Show covering this made its way onto my For You page, and I thought, what better time than now to talk about this on Millennial. Per The Daily Show, the makers of Uno clarified that you cannot play a draw two on top of another draw two to make the next person draw four cards total. And the audible gasp in the audience when Trevor Noah explained this was incredible. And I know that it made people at home gasp too, because the comments under this post were insane, with people saying things like the Uno creators don't know how to play their own game, like they can stuff it. People have really strong opinions about how you should and shouldn't play Uno. Even the official Uno account got in on the action, probably to do some damage control. They replied under this clip with, In life, only three things are certain: the skip card, the reverse card, and playing by your house rules.
Until you change those all too.
That's a good point. And I thought that this it would be kind of fun to kind of use this as a springboard to talk about the types of games that we either grew up playing or that we play even today, and whether or not we play by modified rules.
Can we play this clip first? Because the way people react, like you said, is worth listening to.
Of the card game Uno has come out officially and updated its rules to clarify that you cannot play a draw two on top of another draw two to make the next person draw four. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they say draw two, you take the draw two. That's it.
Whoa. It's like he just announced that JFK was shot or something. Like, they are very shocked by what they just learned.
Listen, I mean, I get it. I don't know if you all have ever played Uno, but it is like, that's when shit gets heated, when you make the next person draw, you know, like 18 cards, and it's only because you keep stacking up those draw four, draw six, draw two.
Like, come on, Uno, we've all been cooped up at home for 2 years. I'm imagining a lot of people have been playing a lot of Uno.
That's true. Yeah.
Dropping this bomb on us.
So what games do we play with modified rules at home?
My family, growing up and even now to this day, we play a lot of Scrabble. And I distinctly remember one time where we played Scrabble with George W. Bush rules. AKA, you could put a word down on the board if it passed as a Bushism. So you could misspell things to make them match his pronunciations of things. One time I came up with damn NATO as one word, and it was accepted by the judges being my parents and my brother in this case. So I think we have a picture of that board from when we finished that game. I'm going to have to dig it up because we had some really fun new words and spellings of things that we came up with courtesy of former President Bush.
Did you ever get into Words with Friends if y'all were big Scrabble? Yeah. Okay.
I loved that. But yeah. I hated it when it wouldn't take certain words that were definitely real words.
No house rules allowed.
Right. I feel like that was a missed opportunity on their part. You should be able to customize that for sure.
I guess. Maybe like limit it to like 5 custom words or something like that. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of cheating, I would think. I hated Monopoly, the version for adults. It was way too complicated. It took hours. So this isn't our own rules, but we did only use, even though we had the adult Monopoly, we only played with the kids' version of Monopoly, which was a lot simpler, a lot faster to play.
I didn't even realize they had a kids' version.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, it was the best.
But I feel like I would have liked it more if I did. I don't understand how people play it the traditional way, because once you start getting properties involved, like buying houses and stuff, it's like, I can't even afford to land on your spot. But I guess that's the whole point, right? That's life. You just get fucked all the time. So it's a cautionary tale, Monopoly.
It is.
I see now they must know that people realize or people feel like Monopoly takes too long, because I'm seeing there's a version called Monopoly Speed.
Oh, God.
And it looks like there's a timer involved, too.
That's just the version where you take like a double dose of Adderall before you start playing and then you just breeze on through.
This box says right on the front of it, really big, I'm looking at it now on Amazon, a Monopoly game you'll actually finish in under 10 minutes. They know what? People think it takes too long to play. Apparently, the average time you're supposed to play Monopoly is 60 to 90 minutes. But again, it takes way longer for people. So there's just a mass misunderstanding.
The thing about Monopoly, too, is that I feel like if you want to play by the rules, every time you play, you have to read the rules again. It's not a really easy game to remember.
Yeah.
How to play, because there are so many rules if you're playing it right. So I think everybody makes up their own Monopoly rules.
I will say there was one version of Monopoly, not Monopoly Junior, that I loved to death, and that was Monopoly at McDonald's, baby! So exciting to peel off those stickers and look for Boardwalk and the other blue one. And then if you found those, you were a millionaire, thanks to all the extra large sodas you were drinking at McDonald's. Did you two do that? Monopoly at McDonald's? That was the freaking
best.
Yeah,
I never won anything.
I never won anything. Maybe like a small
something
fry.
Small? Yeah, yeah, right, right. Oh, right. Man. I used to love that so much.
Andrew, I'm going to have to send you a TikTok that I just saw yesterday of a father wanting to teach his son financial responsibility. So they were playing Monopoly. And this child was in tears. Being like, I don't have any money. And I was like, I know how you feel, kid. Right there with you.
Wow.
So that was the problem with playing Monopoly at my house is that, you know, you have grandchildren of different ages because most likely we were playing like during Christmas or Thanksgiving or something like that. Some kid always ended up crying and it's just not fun. And then the older kid's like, well, it's not fair that we always have to play by like the younger kid rules. So it just like it was a recipe for disaster and we stopped playing real quick.
Speaking of that rage amongst the family members, this isn't Monopoly related, but my family, we used to always play Clue. There was one time we were playing Clue. Ryan had some anger management issues as a child, maybe because he was the youngest. He felt like people were always like teasing him, which may have been true. But we were playing Clue, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but we said something that really annoyed like 12-year-old Ryan. And he goes, that's it! And he shoves the board and it goes flying across the kitchen table. To this day, we still do the Ryan, that's it! Whoosh! Just as a joke.
That's incredible.
I know, I felt like in hindsight, I'm like, oh, poor kid. Clue's definitely one of my favorite board games. That one's so much fun.
I used to like the Game of Life a lot as a kid, but I don't think that that one like holds up as well when you were an adult.
No, because you are playing the Game of Life and you're like,
I know that's true. But I will say, like, in terms of classic board games, we recently busted out the old Battleship set and that was a lot of fun. Like, it was strangely a lot of fun. And now that everybody's an adult, like, you're not like dealing with some kid trying to cheat, move their battleships around and stuff like that.
Did y'all ever play Chutes and Ladders?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I liked that one a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Candyland was really into Candyland.
Oh, yeah. Loved Candyland.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Mm-hmm. How about my Pretty Little Princess? Do you remember that?
Oh, pretty princess, yeah.
Pretty princess, yeah. I used to wear that jewelry. I felt like such a queen.
I love that.
The necklace, the crown.
No, I did not have that, but I remember that in my friend group, there was only one girl that had it. And so every time we all went to her house, we would have to play pretty princess because no one else had it.
Such a good game.
Mm-hmm. And I think that they still sell it because I was at a stationery store the other day that just has like a bunch of knickknacks and gifts and stuff, and I saw a whole display of it. So maybe pretty princess is making a comeback.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing it on Amazon. Only 4 stars on Amazon. I disagree. I would give that 5 stars all day every day. I was cracking up at the food store the other day. I like looking at the clearance section at the food store. And there's a Clue, the game, sitting there. And it's down to a reduced price of $5.25. And there's a note on it that says no murder weapons. And I'm like, so wait, somebody bought this Clue, took it home, took out all the murder weapons, then returned it? We're like, what happens here? Why are there no murder weapons in this Clue board game box?
Who hurt this person, too, that they felt like they needed to, like, suck joy out of somebody who thought they found a full Clue game?
Yeah, come on. I almost bought it because it was like so cheap and I thought the note was so funny. I just had to help out the food store. Should we recommend some board games to the people?
Yeah, go for it.
Pam, you mentioned Battleship. I love this game called Codenames. I think I've brought it up before. And the reason I mentioned Battleship is because it's just like Battleship, but with cards. And there's different brand tie-ins too. Like there's a Disney one, there's a Simpsons one, there's a Harry Potter one. So I really like that. Also really like the card game Joking Hazard, which is like Cards Against Humanity, but with cartoons. You kind of create these little 3-part series and then somebody votes for the best one. And then my recommendation this week, and this is one of those like pre-recommendations where we recommend something before we actually use it, but I've heard so many good things about the card game Spot It. And basically, you just have to be the first to find matches on two separate cards. And like Codenames, there's a ton of different brand tie-ins. There's a Pixar one, Harry Potter, MLB, and then there's just like a standard one. There's different themes like camping. I've seen a lot of people talk about this recently, and I definitely want to get it because it seems very simple. And apparently, there's like five different modes you can play. So that's my rec this week. Spot it. Pre-rec. Let me know if I'm wrong.
I have a couple of board games I'd like to recommend too. My first one is Betrayal at House on the Hill. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. It's a horror game, but it is really cool and unique because it's a tile game that allows you to build your own haunted house as the game board, tile by tile, as you go through the game, meaning that every single time you play this game, the board is different and you get a different story. So if you're into horror things and you want to try your hand at building your own game board as you play, I highly recommend it. And I also have to recommend Ganjaland. Andrew actually gave this to me as a Secret Santa gift a couple of years ago. Was it last year? Was it the year before?
I think just this past year.
You know what? Since 2020, time has no meaning for me. This game is so much fun. It's basically like Candyland, except weed. And what I found really funny about it is one of the opening rules is that you have to imbibe in some of your favorite green herbs before you start playing. And the first few times we tried to play the game, we found that we never got started because we got too stoned. So if you manage to get past the opening rules and play the game, it's so much fun. But even if you don't ever start the game, it's still fun. So highly recommend it. Also, get it sent to you in green wrapping paper like Andrew did for me. That was just like the perfect.
Oh, we spoke about that. That was Amazon. I didn't pick green wrapping paper. Didn't we talk about this? They were probably like,
someone was having a good time.
We spoke about this on air.
Somebody at Amazon was like,
yeah, I'm going to do the green wrapping paper. Yeah. Whoever, I want to meet whoever decided that.
And I wanted to recommend Bonanza. This is also a card game of sorts. Everyone is a farmer in this one, and the goal is to sell as many beans as you can so that you get like a little plot card, and there's different bean cards. Trading is allowed though, and that's what makes this game fun, I think, especially when like multiple people want a certain card so that they can get more points in the end. Because, you know, like if two of you want a card, then it's just both of you trying to sweeten the pot as much as possible until the person that has it gives it to you. So it could get pretty heated, but in a fun way, especially like we've been playing this the last couple of Christmases, just like all the adult cousins. And it's been a really good time. So yeah. I highly recommend checking this one out if you're looking for something that maybe you don't already have in your game cupboard.
Awesome. Fun to talk about games. I need to play them more, I always tell myself.
Yeah, we'll have to keep these in mind as we get closer to the holidays, right?
Right. For family time or Secret Santa time, I guess you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope there's a sequel to Ganjaland that I can buy you, or like an expansion pack.
Ganjaland Part 2, the edible.
Yeah, Ganjaland 2.
Well, I think that's the perfect segue for us to move into our next story. So this week, POTUS, formerly known as Dark Brandon, will henceforth be called Dank Brandon in what is seen as a step towards decriminalization of marijuana at the federal level. President Biden announced pardons for thousands of Americans convicted of simple marijuana possession under federal law. I don't know if we have anything like this, but can we get like an air horn or some kind of sound effect?
Oh, oh, oh. How's that? I just bought that one.
There we go. Andrew, with that first one, I'm not going to lie. It sounded slightly pornographic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stick it in my ass. Oh.
I guess we're we're gonna have to get like a bong bubbling in the future for talking about this. So it's exciting news because simple possession of marijuana is what it sounds like, simply having it. And I know this won't surprise our audience, but Black people are 4 times as likely to be arrested for simple marijuana possession as white people. So moves to decriminalize and, dare I say, legalize potentially marijuana are not only a major step towards chill vibes, but also a major step towards justice. For reference, before Biden's announcement, 6,500 people were convicted of cannabis possession at the federal level. So on top of vacating any remaining sentences, Biden's pardon also expunges any associated felonies, which would make it hard for these people to find jobs, apartments, and educational opportunities. So really exciting news all around.
It was great to see him come through with a campaign promise. I do think the timing is extremely purposeful ahead of the midterms. I mean, that was one of my first takeaways. There's a very big reason why this is happening now, and he wants to squeeze out one more win before November.
Yeah, let's talk about that now, actually, because it's definitely been a pretty common critique amongst those on the right that this is just Biden doing something to shore up votes ahead of midterms. I gotta be honest with y'all, I don't care.
Yeah, no.
I don't care because it's the right thing to do. Whether Biden's motivation here is purely because it is the right thing to do or to give Democrats more momentum in the midterms, the right thing has been done by 6,500 Americans, and that's what I care about. And it's also a step forward towards more sensible drug legislation in the United States.
You don't see many good October surprises. This is a good October surprise. We weren't expecting it in this month, at least. Maybe not even this year.
Yeah.
Especially because a lot of presidents, they'll make campaign promises and then they don't come to fruition. So it's nice to see that he's actually following through.
Yeah. I wish it had come sooner. That's my big critique, is why just now? And I think the answer is midterms, right? At the same time, though, I'm looking at, you know, the momentum that we've seen over the last few months and thinking, well, if we plummet during the midterms, it's not going to be because Joe Biden didn't do enough ahead of midterms. So I think it's generally a positive for Democrats going into this election. But I did want to say it doesn't by any means solve our country's failed war on drugs efforts. 3,000 people are still convicted of higher level marijuana charges federally, and another 30,000 are still in prison in several states for basic marijuana possession. Although Biden has called on state governors to follow his lead and pardon these charges, he isn't able to compel state governors to do so. Now, I know in recent days, some state governors have weighed in on this. There's, I think, a couple of examples of Democratic governors saying they're going to follow the lead. There's maybe one or two Democrats who are in purple states who are trying to thread a very fine needle here. And then, of course, there are Republican governors calling Biden soft on crime, trying to link his views to being like pro-marijuana to being pro-fentanyl and other craziness. So I think what we're hearing across the board is about what we would expect in terms of reactions to this. But I thought something else we could talk about is the next steps that the president has promised. He's proposing a review of the way that marijuana is scheduled as a federal substance. So currently it is a Schedule I drug, and it is in the same category as LSD and ecstasy, and somehow scheduled higher than cocaine and fentanyl.
That is shocking.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And what does it mean to be Schedule I? Because I did Google it. I can answer it if you want.
Go for it.
Being at Schedule I means it has a high potential for abuse, no currently accepted medical use and treatment, which I don't think is true. Says who? And a lack of accepted safety for use under medical supervision. So this is just a very outdated stance for marijuana. We know it has very important life-changing medical benefits.
It's also kind of crazy because like this is marijuana is so much easier to federally regulate if it's legal. I think that like, well, I know that when I was in high school, a big thing, and I'm sure, you know, maybe you guys remember this too. I don't know. Even in college, the whole point of like buying from somebody that you could trust was to make sure that your marijuana or your edibles weren't laced with anything.
Yeah.
So getting all of that cut out and being able to go to a dispensary to make sure that what you're getting is what's on the label, or like that you know exactly what you're going to be dealing with when you ingest that, is huge.
Absolutely. And
that's way different than something like, you know, ecstasy, for example, which is more like a bathtub drug. Like people make that shit in their kitchens or, you know, stuff like that. And it's way more dangerous than something that's being grown.
Right. You think about the effects too. There was a time 12, 13 years ago when I did LSD and shrooms, and those are extremely powerful. I, having done both now, I would definitely keep those two separate. I would not put them in the same category.
Right.
LSD, you wake up still tripping and it's unpleasant. You're like, I just want this to be over already. Go away.
Andrew, I didn't know you did LSD.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You stare at the ceiling and it starts moving, and you look at something in the distance and that comes to life. It's wild. I probably did it like 5 times. But to Pam's point about it being regulated and you can trust it, I was younger, so I don't think I thought about that as much. But in hindsight, I couldn't trust where that came from. Who the hell knows what that was?
Yeah. And it's just wild to me. I mean, fentanyl, we know, is a Schedule II drug in the same category as Adderall and other medications intended for ADHD. And we know how those can be abused. And I have to say, I've never heard of anyone overdosing from marijuana. Fentanyl is something that you can die from if you take it once.
Right.
When we look at the opioid epidemic in this country and the fact that synthetic opioids like fentanyl make up the overwhelming majority of opioid-related overdoses and deaths, it's clear that this list is just completely not keeping up with our modern times. And it was, you know, I don't even know when this would have been written or when marijuana got included on it. What are you going to say, Andrew?
I was going to make a joke, but we can move past it.
Oh, but I brought the mood down by talking about opioid deaths.
No. I was going to say the only time you think you're going to die of marijuana is, no, that doesn't make sense. Never mind. Let's just move on.
Hey, listen, sometimes you can get too high and that's not a fun experience either.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. And that's when you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. But you're not actually going to die.
That's when you have to.
Nobody has ever died of an overdose.
No, that's when you just have to sit there and say, my name is Andrew Sims. I live at my phone number.
Incredible.
Marijuana has a lot of built-in guardrails because, to your point, you can't OD on it. You can get too high on it, and that can be uncomfortable, but you'll get past it, and you'll be okay, and you'll know better, and you'll do better the next time. With a lot of these drugs, there is no next time, which is why marijuana probably shouldn't even be on this list at all, in my humble opinion. Also wanted to point out that 68% of Americans support marijuana legalization, according to a recent Gallup poll. So we know that the majority of the country is in line with what the Biden administration is trying to do.
And for comparison's sake, I'm just looking, even back in 2013, it looks like only 50% of people were in support. So it's climbed 18 points in just under 10 years, pretty significant. I think it's at the point now where even if you don't smoke, you know somebody who does. And for that reason, I think you might feel like you're okay with it. Sort of like at this point, everybody knows somebody who's gay. There's just no avoiding gayness and marijuana at this point.
No avoiding gay weed.
Definitely not avoiding that. Thanks for updating us on that, Laura. And with that, we're going to get to recommendations in a second. First, actually, just want to plug After Dark this week. We'll be discussing the millennial pause. What is it? Are we guilty? And is our age starting to show in other parts of the internet too? There's a whole article in The Atlantic about this. Then we'll talk about other ways that millennials are looking less cool, thanks to how we do selfies and the words we use, et cetera, et cetera. And to help us with this discussion, because there is a Gen Z angle to this, Chloe will be joining us. Chloe, our social media manager, will be joining us for that discussion. So that will be fun. That'll be at patreon.com/millennial this week. And don't forget the deadline to become a Bay patron to receive the Millennial Adulting Planner. Pledge your upgrade to the $10 level by Thursday, October 20th, to receive yours. And then fill out the order form by Saturday, October 22nd. Then we'll get one of these out to you in November. Time for some recommendations. I already recommended Spot It, the card game. Laura, Pam, what do you got for us?
I'd like to recommend a game that you can buy on Steam. It's called Vampire Survivors. It's out in early access right now. It's literally $3, but it provides endless entertainment. It's essentially a game where you are trying to survive as long as you can with literally hundreds and sometimes thousands, it feels like, of different combatants descending on you. And throughout the game, you are trying to level up your character and their weapons so that you can more efficiently take out those enemies. So again, another horror inspired recommendation from me. Feels very appropriate since we're in October, but highly recommend it. And if you have a Steam Deck, I've really enjoyed playing it on there too.
You have a Steam Deck?
Yeah.
That big thing, like the Nintendo Switch?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I want to hear about this later.
Didn't you see my comment in the Facebook group?
No, I think I missed it. Okay. Oh, yeah. I remember replying to that, but I didn't see your reply. I'm sorry.
I replied to your reply.
What the hell? Facebook? That's one comment I actually would want to get a notification for. What the hell? Maybe I muted you on Facebook.
Maybe. I am pretty annoying on Facebook.
Yeah. So annoying.
I wanted to recommend Dairy Girls on Netflix, season 3, if you're already caught up, and then the show in general, if you haven't watched it. Season 3 is the last season, so if you've been waiting on this show to be completed before you binge it, now is a good time to do that. It is a 90s-based coming-of-age comedy, and it's just super charming. It's really sweet. It's really funny. It takes place in Northern Ireland. And, you know, obviously Northern Ireland in the 90s was a place of great turmoil in the country. So that's kind of like the backdrop for this, in addition to teenage hijinks and stuff like that. But it's a really great show. And I highly recommend checking it out if you're looking for a really easy binge, because 30-minute episodes and the seasons are really short. So
awesome. Couple other reminders. We are off next week. We'll catch you in 2 weeks from now. Make sure you're following the show in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. And do leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can contact us by writing to millennialshow@gmail.com, or you can use the contact form or anonymous confessional on millennialshow.com. And then finally, follow us on social media. We are Millennial Show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And over on TikTok, we are Millennial Pod. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.